pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded GamerCast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. I'm not sitting outside because the bugs are too fucking loud in Arizona. Locusts. That's what it is. That's what happens in monsoon season in Arizona. It's hot as balls and bugs are loud as balls. I mean, it doesn't necessarily work, but you guys know what I'm getting at.
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know what's wrong with your balls, but mine are typically just silent observers. Passengers along for the ride, if you will. They're not really loud.
My balls have always been outspoken. All right, you are listening to the GamerCast. I am drinking some cherry bourbon and Coke. What are you drinking, Nathan?
I'm going to suffer for this for the end of the podcast, but Guinness. Sweet, sweet, delicious
you
Guinness.
You are going to suffer. Did you take your meds?
No, I forgot them in the car, and I was too lazy to go get them. But that's fine.
Sweet, you're not going to be too lazy to get to the bathroom in the morning.
Right.
Now, mine just gives... does that shit for you?
Yeah, but she's doing whatever. I don't know. All I do is get heartburn, so.
I shit myself into a coma. That's the problem with being lactose intolerant. There's no just, oh, heartburn's so bad. It's like, oh man, I can't stand up straight. Joy. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what we did this week in hobby. I personally did jack shit because I'm on vacation. Nathan, what about you?
Got some more painting done on some 30K Marines, put some base coats onto my, dreadnought. Other than that, it's been a pretty, bullshit paperwork kind of week. Cause
it's
I'm
summer.
Starting a job tomorrow, which means that all this week they've been like, hey, we need you to fill these in. Okay. Now these. Also these, and I'm like, God damn it, like, fuck. Like, I don't own a printer because I usually work in offices.
There you go.
Where you literally use them, so...
Well, that's what I always said.
Inconvenient.
That is just a wife story I'm going to skip. So let's move on to the weekly listener poll. The question that we had for you guys last week was, do you like the new Codex layout for 7th edition 40K? With a resounding 72% of the vote, fuck no, was the answer. Which is absolutely no surprise. We had a couple of people say, yeah, I guess. Which, I mean, nobody was really able to rationalize for me. We had a couple of comments here. Somebody actually posted a comment on the poll again, which is always a joy. Irv. As a longtime Orc player, I can remember that it was Paul Bonner's wonderful artwork in the old Here We Go Orc Codex from the 1980s that got me into Orcs in the first place. Standard procedure at GW has been to release an Orc Codex every 7 years or so, whether we need one or not. So can someone tell me why GW decides to use the latest Orc Codex release as the one to break the standard Codex layout format on?
You know, that's a good point, because the old Orc Codex that came out at the tail end of 4th was the very first of the new layout format that they used through all of 5th and 6th. And now we get a new Orc Codex, which is, oh my god, the worst army book layout I've ever
terrible
struggled
oh
with.
it's shit.
You know what, because like I thought it was bad, and then I had to make this list, and granted this list only has like 5 unique units because that's the Orc Codex, but holy shit, could you imagine trying to build like a Space Marine book with this layout?
Well, see, that's part of the issue, because Orcs are so straightforward, there's not a lot of options for them. It's just units. Right. So this codex is filled top to bottom with various unit choices that you're able to enjoy. But the units don't really have options. It's just like the odd characters have options, and you can maybe take one upgrade here and there.
Well,
but if you were to look
at the weapons, they're like, do you want a huge choppa or a power claw? Exactly. And I'm like, well, I can memorize these 2 points.
Exactly. Right. But when you go look at something like Tyranids, or you go look at Eldar or Space Marines. You know, like the options just go through the roof, and before you know it, it's like, what, you're gonna pack that shit on every page and then make people flick back and forth on a regular basis? I mean, it's just silly. I really don't think that it was just that they didn't think it through, or they're just not thinking at all. But I'm gonna go ahead and vote for the latter on that case. Andrews
costs money that can be better spent.
Yeah,
graphic designers. Fuck those guys, am I right?
Like, but we said we liked the pictures, right? Like, we felt like the pictures worked very well.
But see, artists and graphic designers are two completely different things. I don't know. Like I said, it just, this layout is very poorly thought out. Honestly, I didn't think anyone else ran it until I was going through the comments on the poll where good old Andrew pointed out that Privateer Press has been running this exact same layout. And then he quickly adds on that they do also provide you with unit cards. So if you wanted to build a list, it's super easy. Just lay out your cards in front of you, attack wing style, and start adding points.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't want to get too much into this. I really feel like, again, like I said, nobody was able to post something that said, oh, hey, here you go. Like, this is why this works. This is why, you know, this new Codex layout is just the winner because I'm this type of person and I play this. Like nobody. Everybody looked at it and said, this is fucking stupid. Why is it laid out like this? It's not like you're saving pages. It's not like you're doing anything. It's just somebody thought, well, we have to change the layout. So let's put war gear at the front and then let's put unit entries and then let's put weapons and then psychic powers at the back for some reason. Like, it was just totally silly.
Yeah, it really does make no sense.
All right, so thanks to everyone who voted on this week's weekly listener poll. You can find those at jadedgamercast.com, and we will have another one for you at the end of the show, of course, if we remember. So let's talk about our model of the week. This is kind of an interesting one because it's been quite a while since we saw anything for Firestorm Armada out of Spartan Games. They've been focusing on Dystopian Wars 2.0, and rightfully so. They've been doing a lot of releases, and, you know, it's very interesting because when you go look at Spartan's website, you know, I can check it on a daily basis, and typically every couple of weeks I'll see something new, right? And it's very straightforward, and you know exactly what you're getting. However, this time around, for some weird-ass reason, the pictures are terrible. And I just don't get it, because we used to get these high-def shots where you could zoom in, take a good look at the ship, get an idea of what it was going to look like, and then now we get the Bakash and the Tarakian stuff, and they're so blurry. Like, who put these up? Like, who decided that it was okay to put this picture through? Or was it just the fact that their webmaster doesn't know how to upload a JPEG, you know?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what it is, because you're right. Normally, Spartan Games will, especially on their pre-orders, which these are, they will give you the highest res 3D render, because that's all they are.
Yes.
These are the 3D renders of our sculpts. So here you go. And they're always super high. Exactly. So they're always super high res. You're always able to kind of look in and really, truly appreciate it. The resolution on these images is so bad that I have to squint to try to read the text that they've put on them because, like, they fucking, yeah, I don't know what it is, because this is a first, and this is on all of their August 13th pre-orders. Right. And even beyond this, this is a really, really weird pre-order, like wave of releases. Because, again, like you said, they have been focusing on Dystopian Wars 2.0 to go with the new edition. What we've seen from there are new patrol fleet boxes for the seven core races for naval and land. Coming out in another 10 days or so is going to be the air, you know, patrol fleet box for all of the seven core races. Mm-hmm. But whereas with Firestorm, what we saw was then this awesome repackaging and resculpting of the entire range. So I could buy a cruiser box in the max unit size and they could all be heavy cruisers or this or that. You know, and we saw that be Spartan's releases for the next few months. Out of nowhere, we have new sculpts for Bakash and Tarakians, and then literally a brand new fleet for Dystopian Wars. Like, that's the right. Indian Raj fleet doesn't exist. Like, there are no rules for them. I'm looking at the models going, I really like them, they're nice, but what the fuck are they?
Well, what's also kind of weird about it is everything that we've seen for Dystopian Wars up until this point has been a live shot, right, of a painted fleet on a table. So why are we now going back to this, you know, like, hey, everybody, here's the 3D, you know, the 3D sculpts. And yeah, like, it's a nice looking fleet. I think the weirdest thing for me is that we knew that this was going to be happening for Firestorm Armada because we saw the updates back in May. So we saw the different names for Bakash, the different names for Tarakians. We knew that the fleets were going to be coming our way. And it was very clear that for these particular fleets, we were going to see resin. Because the old ones is a mixture of pewter and resin. and Spartan is making the choice to just completely go away from pewter altogether, which is, you know, great. I mean, they do a great job with their resin, so I don't know why anybody would ever have a complaint about that. But again, we look at them and we go, okay, but they're really, like, they're basically the same ships. Like, there's kind of nothing changed. Like, I kind of suspect we would get not necessarily just, like, a quick aesthetic update, but these virtually are the same ships as what was there. And it's not like there were a lot of options for Bakash up until this point. It was, you had one frigate squad, which was a piece of pewter, opened or closed, but it didn't matter, and they were just kind of shitty little ships. And then you saw the cruisers, which were actually really cool looking. So, you know, I thought, oh, okay, maybe they're going to go away from it. Maybe they're going to change it. Instead, they just decided, well, you know, what we're going to do is just take the options away and they're just going to be closed all the time. And I kind of thought to myself, you know, like, but that's why people liked Bakash. Like, that's why they were interested in them, is they had this, like, opening claw type of design that was very unique compared to other fleets. But now you go look at these, and I believe in the patrol fleet you get two destroyers instead of cruisers, which I think is kind of a nice touch. But again, they're very, very different. But let's talk about the models in general. Let's talk about the box set. We'll start with that Bakash patrol fleet. We're getting SRS tokens. If you had the hardcover books for Xenian League and Alliance of Kurok, you did notice that there were 3D sculpt pictures of SRS tokens for each of the fleets. So we knew we were going to be getting custom SRS tokens for each of the fleets. But obviously, because this picture is so fucking garbage, we can't even tell whether they're good or not. They look like SRS tokens.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I cannot tell any detail at all on the SRS tokens. It really is unfortunate to see that. Because, I mean, like, again, you're trying to sell me on this box. You're trying to say, hey, why don't you buy these models? Look how good they are, when it looks like the picture is taken with a fucking potato. Like, it's terrible.
Now, you know, is that a 3 gigabyte? Is that a 3 megabyte potato, Nathan?
No, I think it's the 2.4.
Oh, the 2.4 is the one with that spud zoom. Oh, puns. Puns right. For days.
You know, so yes, you're right. We can't tell if the SRS tokens are any good. Honestly, when I first saw this grainy photo, even grainier on Facebook, I was just like, holy shit, new pathogen! And then I clicked the link and was disappointed.
They do kind of look like pathogen if you squint.
Well, because I said go to the Firestorm one where it's just like, and you're just scrolling down and you just see this photo even grainier. You're just like, yay, pathogen! And then, like I said, I was just really disappointed. But once I got over that, I mean, the frigates are frigates, big deal. I actually do really like the destroyers. Like, yes. I really want to talk about them because I look at them and I like them a lot. I think that they look great. And, you know, we're going to talk about the cruisers later. But what I love about them is the fact that they look completely different from the cruisers. So,
well, yeah, exactly. Right. I think what was so interesting about it was when you go in there and you break down, the easiest way to say it would be if you kind of break down the trend that we've seen for them. This is what you would expect. New aesthetic. We see a new aesthetic for the frigates, kind of still along the same line, but they said, right, those old boxy looking pieces of shit need to go. Let's make these a little meaner. And then we see different sculpts for the destroyers that, again, set themselves apart. So I love what they're doing here. And I love that what we're seeing for the battleship that comes in that box is that it's very similar to the picture that we saw from way back in the day of what was supposed to have been their dreadnought, I believe. But still very cool. Well designed. And again, like I said, I actually think it's very interesting that they're saying, you know what? We're not just going to pile cruisers into this box. We're going to go ahead and put some destroyers in there. You know, make it worthwhile. Make it give somebody a little bit more options. So now if somebody's trying to get into the game, it's buy a cruiser box, buy the patrol box, and you're set. You're not doubling up on units. You're getting a nice mix. So, you know, I definitely appreciate that.
I definitely do like it. And, you know, maybe it's because I feel like destroyers in Firestorm Armada are very much a love them or hate them kind of unit. Like, I swear by my Terran destroyers, I don't think I'll ever take a list without them. But I've actually never seen anyone else take destroyers. It's something like that. So I think this is Spartan's not so subtle way of pushing destroyers, because again, cruisers are workhorses. Everyone's going to buy a cruiser box. But this way, again, if I pick up the patrol fleet and I'm filling out my minimums and I only have these as my tier two, I have to take this unit of destroyers, and it forces me to try them out and realize that they're pretty good. Because again, like, I ran my destroyers right next to a unit of cruisers, and at the end, after three games, I was like, fuck cruisers, destroyers for life. Like, yeah, you know, and I feel like a lot of armies have really great destroyers, because again, like, when you and I and Tom were talking about Rolthosa destroyers, we're just like, why the fuck doesn't Maddie ever take them? Maddie's convinced they're crap. And I think, like, that's kind of why they're doing it, and why they're putting cruiser boxes out separate. But what I do appreciate is if they are going to change patrol fleets and always put destroyers in them, which I think is a great choice, the fact that they are releasing the cruiser box at the same time is just like a like fucking power move.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, don't be a dick about it and just be like, oh, you have cruisers and heavy cruisers one day.
Right. Well, what's interesting to note about these particular destroyers, if you guys haven't looked at the rules, like everything in the Bakesh fleet, for the most part, they're all best at range band one and they're built around assault. So these are not typical destroyers that you would see in other fleets. They're actually more similar to the Rolthosa destroyers that are bruiser, like heavy cruiser style ships. They have ambush 2, and you can give them special forces for 5 points, and they have 5 AP. Now, max and minimum squad size is 2, so what you get in that box is the best you can take in a squad, but 10 points of AP with special forces is very good. And ambush is very good on a unit like this, considering that they also have movement 10 and 5 AP. I mean, like, really strong squad. I don't think anybody's going to look at these and go, 75 points each, fuck that. Like, I think anybody playing Bakesh is going to want one or two of these, and they will be super happy with them. So,
yeah,
considering that, again, the models, like, appear to be cool.
Well, you know, right? I mean, from the way I'm squinting, they look great. And yeah, again, talk about the rules, the fact that you have a ideal range band of 1 and 2 with special forces and ambush, you're just like, right, I'm just going to sit, and as soon as something juicy comes by, I'm popping out and boarding.
And you're if somebody's dumb enough to go, I'm going to fly up to this ambush marker and see if he's there, and then you have to make that command check, it's like, who cares, man? Oh, look, you found me. I'm coming at you, you know? It really is a great way to play them, and I become more and more in love with ambush the more I play with it. So I really like this squad, and I think, again, the models appear at first squinty glance to be pretty cool, you know? Cool design. So I like what I'm seeing so far. The battleship, again, it's hard to tell the scale. Like any capital ship, when we see these boxes, we know that that's not the scale. We know that this thing isn't barely bigger than... it's a battle carrier, not a battleship. I'm sorry. That might be the right size, actually, then. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, but again,
it is nice looking.
You have to look at... because, I mean, there are very few battle carriers in the game, but even if you look at the size of the Aquan one, that's a big, beefy ship. Like, it's halfway to a dreadnought. So I expect something similar there. We're probably going to see bigger than a battleship, smaller than a dreadnought, that nice in between size. It's going to be a good size. As to the aesthetic, if you like it, you're going to love this one.
Yep, absolutely. All right. So let's talk about the Bakesh cruisers. So again, here's where you kind of look at it and go, you know, why are we kind of getting the same aesthetic, but we're not getting the options that we had before? And again, keep in mind that we haven't seen the models. We don't know if there's some other option. But when you look at the box breakdown, 3 cruiser hulls, which means they're basically going to be one piece, with the heavy cruiser conversion parts, so you can have 3 heavy cruisers as well, and then just the flight stand. So the bottom one there being the heavy cruiser doesn't look all that much heavier, but definitely a very, very different look to it. It's kind of got less of a claw look to it. But, you know, I like the look. I think that they've done a very good job of kind of giving you what you want while also taking away the options of saying playing that open clawed fleet. So, again, I like them. I think they're cool. What's the price on these? Because these do seem like really big models. 22 pounds. I mean, that's not crazy at all.
I was going to say, I think that's
average.
I was going to say, I think that's really par for the course for any cruiser box set. Because I'm just looking at my Terran Alliance cruisers, 22 pounds, you know, shield cruiser, 2250. I mean, like, it's pretty much the same across. So, I mean, you know, no surprise there. No surprise that it matches the prices. I mean, they're really just trying to bring everything in line. Really, you know, like you know what I'm saying? Because, like, before, their fucking prices and their packaging were all over the place.
Yep.
I still stand by what I've said. Firestorm Armada packaging is the smartest that Spartan Games has ever done.
Yep.
And I hope to God we see this style of packaging with Dystopian Wars. I really do. I just, please, yep. Like, please give me this, because right now, building fleets in Dystopian Wars is painful when it's just like, all right, so I have to buy two blister packs, then I have the extra ship, and, like, fuck.
Yep. All right. So, there's the models there. I don't think there's a whole lot more to say about them, but, again, we keep seeing good stuff out of Firestorm Armada, so, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing if they're going to be releasing RSN next, or if we're going to start seeing those goddamn Marauder rules that just really, really, really need to get done. I mean, it's just stupid at this point that this isn't out. Mm-hmm. And we say it every time we talk about Firestorm Armada, but it's just absolutely fucking retarded. Get those rules out. FAQ them a month from now if they're broken. But get the rules out. Let people play the fleets they bought, for fuck's sakes.
You know, and that's the big thing that's crazy to me, is, like, these rules came out, like, 2.2.0 came out in December. So, I mean, here we are. We've hit July. It has been 8 months. And you have people, and I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Obviously, they have the sales numbers, so they're just like, yeah, those five guys, fuck them. But there are people who own your product, who may want to play, and whom you are saying can't. That's the craziest thing. Like, it's just, you know, and what's so weird is it's clear they learned their lesson with Dystopian, because less than a month into Dystopian 2.0, we get rules for everyone. So you're just like, okay, so why are Marauders players still second-class citizens? Like, yeah. This is bullshit.
Well, the only saving grace, I don't even think it's the sales numbers, I think just the only saving grace here is that the majority of Firestorm Armada players have multiple fleets. And so they shelve that fleet, they go play their other fleet in the meantime, so they don't feel like they're getting the shaft too badly. But it is just, like I said, it's fucking stupid. All right, so let's talk about the orcs again. It's been a week since the orcs came out there, Nathan. And just like I always ask you, every time we do a book, has your opinion of the book changed or the army changed in terms of, you know, its power level? Is it over 9,000 or are we talking about going here?
I think that there is one build of orcs, foot orcs, that are going to do very, very, very well for themselves. I think from a power level, you cannot be upset even a little bit if that's the style of orc army you already play.
Right.
You know, but my opinion really hasn't changed. This book is bland, you know, and it was even more obvious as I was sitting down and trying to make a list.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, I did literally what I said I'd do. Start with the war boss because the wall is too good to pass up.
Right.
I flipped through the other 11 pages of HQs and decided that, nah, nothing was really great. So I passed on a second HQ. I filled in my troops, which was three full units of boys and then three units of minimum 35-point grot units, because objective secured on a 35-point unit.
And you didn't pay the point for shootas.
I did, because I still think shootas are the way to go.
Okay, there you go.
You know, but anyway, I mean, we can get to that. But again, like, then I was flipping through, and none of the elites really stood out to me as worth the points, because at first I was like, I'll take a big unit of mega knobs, and then I'd like, you know, had my war boss in mega armor and took the mega knobs and the lucky stick and put him in a battle wagon. I'm like, why am I spending 700 points on 10 orcs? Like, that literally defeats the purpose of orcs. So that unit got the cut. And like, as I just kept flipping the page, I was just like, there were so many units where I was just like, pass, 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 pass. So no, my opinion hasn't changed. I still feel like this is a bland codex. But in the realm of 7th edition 40K, and God, it is so weird to say that. I mean, shit, I remember 7th
edition. I don't care. Nobody, it doesn't feel like it's a new edition. Like,
no, it really doesn't.
There's not a single thing about it that makes me go like, oh yeah, this is so much different from 7th or from 6th. Like, it's just...
No, but I mean, like, for me, it was just like, I remember where it's just like 3rd edition 40K, 6th edition Fantasy. Now Fantasy only has one edition lead when at one point they were three. Craziness. Anyway, off that little tangent, you know, this is an army that is going to be able to win games. It has the tools it needs. As much as the mob rule sucks, you know, you can work around it. And at the end of the day, even with the mob rule, 30 orc boys sitting on an objective, it, you know, with objective secured, because as we said last week, don't bother taking the force org chart in this codex and giving up objective secured.
No.
30 orc boys with a hidden power claw in there, you're not killing that in a turn. I don't care what you are. Like, it, you know, that is a rock solid contester. And as I've seen written about Tyranids, I know right now online a lot of people are trying to pump Tyranids as like a hugely competitive army. Is they're like, you put 30 gaunts on an objective, if you spread them out correctly, no one can get close enough to contest you without having to charge and pull you off. So, you know, make those orcs and suddenly it's even better.
Well, yeah, there you go.
So
for me, yeah, nothing has changed. I'm not walking away from, you know, sitting at it, looking at the book and really trying to put an army together. And for this one in particular, I really tried to do something that was not just shit I own. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because in this case, I felt like, again, what I own is so old, and it was a store army, and it was never super competitive at any given point, so I'm not trying to just build off of what I own. And again, there's a lot of gorgeous models that if I were to pick up my orcs, I would play them, right? Like, I love the Gorgonaut. I love a lot of the stuff that I've seen. So, you know, I wanted to try to build something that would really take advantage of that. But outside of the guns and the Gorgonaut, I don't want any of the new stuff in my list.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Which is super unfortunate because, I mean, again, only from a competitive standpoint. Keep that in mind. I'm not looking at this and going, oh, man, this is, you know, I just want to get them sniz guns on the table. Like, it really is just I look at it and I go, but they just don't make sense for the points, right? Like, I'm too much of a gamer to look at that and go, absolutely, I'm taking flash kits, right? Like, it just...
Even when you look at them from a points perspective, even if you were like, maybe I guess I could justify them, that then you look at the dollar value, you know, the dollar value, and you're like $65 for five, and I need a unit of what, 10?
Yep.
I'm not going to spend $130.
There's no fucking way.
On 10 guys, no matter how nice I think the models are, how much I want to paint them, because that's a Gorgonaut. Actually, that's more than a Gorgonaut. So just like, I can pick up this huge, awesome, amazing, gigantic showpiece of a model for less money than that. Like, I'm sorry, I can't justify that cost.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter what it comes down to. But no, I mean, like, you know, it's unfortunate. But like I said, it feels like this book is kind of bland. And it's crazy considering just how many pages of army list we have here. I mean, we have almost... what, 35 pages of unit entries? So, I mean, like, clearly we've got tons and tons and tons of things that you could do. Although I never thought to put a Lord of War in. I think next 40K Codex I'll put a Lord of War in for shits and giggles. Because I was like, maybe I'll just do, like, 90 Slugga Boys with a Stompa. And be like, come at me, bro.
And just stand under the Stompa and make sure you're fearless? No, right. You know, it... I think the big thing for me when building a list was I had to constantly remind myself that mob rules kind of is more of a detriment now than anything else. Whereas before, I would always build something and say, oh, yeah, well, I'm absolutely going to take 30-man units of orcs because, you know, I want that mob rule. Keep me fearless. Keep me going in the game. Now I'm looking at it going, well, shit. I mean, outside of the units I'm going to be putting on the table to claim objectives, I'm basically just going trucks, right? Like, I'm putting boys in trucks and keeping it as cheap as possible and just getting them up the table to just cause as much havoc as possible while my guns essentially win or lose me the game, right?
Yeah.
There's a couple odd exceptions to that rule. Like, I still have Death Coptas in there. I really like Death Coptas. But again, that's part of, I like the models. I like the unit. I think they're really cool.
Oh, you like that old second ed one, like flying bathtub?
No, I got starter kit ones, man. I wasn't a sucker.
I wasn't
a sucker who didn't pick up like as many of the starter kit ones as I could. But yeah, like it falls back to one of those things where, you know, there's very few choices. And again, even Death Copters, I know full well that they're not the best option, right? Like I should be taking bikes, you know, like if that's what I really want to do, I should be taking bikes. So it doesn't make sense for me to try to fit Death Copters in, but I like them. I like them in the list. So, okay. So, go ahead and take us through your list there, Nathan. What size points were you building for?
I built for 1850 because that seems to be the pretty common 40K tournament size in our part neck of the woods. No matter how much you and I promote, try to pump smaller point sizes. 1850 seems to be the thing. So that's what I went for. You know, my list is no surprise because I said I started half of it. So I went with a war boss, gave him heavy armor. I refuse to speak Orky. The Gorka, like the relic of second warlord trait.
Yep.
Because again, it's fantastic, and you're limited to one, right? Like that's the big thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You're limited to one, so if you're gonna take the mega armor, war boss, you want to take the lucky stick. If you're gonna take the, you know, any other war boss, you're just gonna take the thinking cap. It's fucking 10 points. It gives you a strategic warlord trait, which could literally alter the way your army plays.
Again,
so,
just for the points cost, it's an auto include.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So just war boss, you know, heavy armor, thinking cap, power claw. He comes out to a nice trim 99 points, and he does everything I need him to do.
Mm-hmm.
If he dies, I don't care. I'm calling the wall probably on turn two, so
that's
he's
right.
going to live to see that. After that, I took three units of 30 shooter boys. Yes, I'm paying the extra point, but I still feel like, you know, all of those shots.
40K is still a shooting game.
Yeah, you know, and that's the big thing. 40K is still a shooting game, and that's, yeah.
Fire that you're getting is always going to outweigh the extra attack.
Although, yeah. No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, yes, orcs can be fast, and they can get their way into combat super, super fast, especially with being able to run and charge thanks to the Waw.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go, giving them more reliable long charges.
Right.
I still felt that just having 90 boys, each unit of which throws out over 60 shots a turn, is just money. Like there's no other way, you know, no other way to look at it. I mean, it's a mountain of shots coming out.
Yeah.
And that unit itself, despite being 30 men, three big shooters, knob with a power claw, and I did buy the boss pull.
You always buy the boss pull. Yeah,
you know, I was gonna say they changed the boss pull. Now you're just re-rolling it on like whatever your D6 on the mob check on the mob rule is. But you know, if I'm not locked in combat, a one has my unit falling back on a pinning or morale check. Mm-hmm. So I want the boss pull that lets me re-roll those ones.
Yeah, that's all it's there
my
for.
My shitty D6 strength 4 AP dash.
Yep.
Wounds into the unit and just run with it.
That's right.
Or hits and then whatever. And then, because, as I said, if you have spare troops choices, you just want to take a minimum size unit to Gretchen for it. So I have three units of those because I'm spending a killer 105 points to give me 33 objective secured, go to ground every turn models. So they're a nuisance to have to deal with, and they're really going to help me just kind of lock down on objectives. Or even run up and steal objectives away from my opponent who's not using objective secured troops.
Mm-hmm.
So can't go wrong having three additional scoring units like that. After that, I took a big old unit of 30 Storm Boys because, as I said, they are easily the best unit in this book. You know, in my opinion, I think that the new Storm Boy rules, being able to take a 30-man mob, 2d6 run after moving 12, and charge with the Waw, everything about them is just fantastic. They're going to have a ridiculously long charge range. Knob with a power claw and a boss pull. You're going to hear that a lot. Then I took 15 war bikers. Knob, power claw, boss pull. The biggest thing with them is they are just going to screen the Storm Boys. So, I mean, I'm going to deploy the Storm Boys right behind. The war bikers are going to move 12. the Storm Boys jump up right behind him. Then the Warbikers go flat out, which pulls them a 3+ cover save.
Yep.
Because as soon as you declare a shot at them, I'm just going to say I'm going to jink, because who cares about
exactly
snapshots? Right. I'm orcs.
Right.
So they're going to pull a 3+ cover save. They're going to provide cover to the Storm Boys behind them. And then on turn two, everyone's charging in and just being like a real fucking nuisance. Right. And then after that, I just went for the mech guns to fill out the rest of my points. So I have 5 mech guns where I'm keeping the cannons, and 5 mech guns where I took the tractor cannons to say, fuck you, flying monstrous creatures. Because the fact that for 150 points, I can statistically kill a winged hive tyrant with a single shoot, you know, in a single turn.
Yep.
Dude, why the fuck would I not do that?
No, it's ridiculous. And they, again, their auto includes into the list. I think you're crazy not to go that way. I mean, my list, very similar to yours. I went unbound all Gorkonauts. I just feel like I just feel like I need
that's,
to win.
That's not similar to mine at all.
No, but again, I wanted to do mega armor knobs. Can't do it. I want to do even just a big unit of knobs with my war boss. Can't do it. I want to do, you know, a Gorkonaut on the table. And yeah, I can't do it. I can't make it work because I keep going back to it going, but I need to have the winning unit. Like I want to have the stuff that's getting me games. The only difference on this one is, again, I said I went with Koptas instead of bikes. Mm-hmm. Primarily just for, you know, twin linked rockets and then the mix of the bombs and all that kind of stuff to go with it. And then I think I only went 60 boys with shooters.
Mm-hmm.
But what I ended up doing is instead of another unit of 30, I took 2 units of 10 trucks. And I think I had 1 less unit of Gretchen or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that was the balance, right? Like I figured, okay, well, I'm splitting this up. These guys are going to be a little bit more mobile for claiming mm-hmm. objectives, and they'll be able to get in and still do work against stuff that's not necessarily great in combat. Like sometimes 30 orcs is just so much overkill that you feel like you just don't have enough options. Like all I need to do is kill that 5-man Pathfinder squad. I don't need to put 30 orcs into him, you know, so just a 10-man ready to go. But yeah, like that's it. That's where it ends. I don't feel that anything other than Storm Boys is a great option for fast attack.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like regardless of the Koptas and the bikes, again, I think Koptas and bikes are cool, but Storm Boys, they're the choice, man. They're in there. They're so good for what they do. And the mech, the guns are just, I mean, you can't even compare them. You can't even compare them to anything else.
Well, and that's what we talked about last week when we were going through all the heavy support choices. You might want to take a unit of Ludas because they're going to pop a Rhino or a Chimera every single time they shoot, and great for them. But like the Death Dread doesn't compare. The Killicans with their stupid shitty eye take bullshit glancing hits rule just doesn't compare. The Gorkonaut and Morkonaut are so expensive that you might take one.
Yeah, my Killicans and my Death Dread will never see the table again.
You know, well, I was going to say, the Death Dread isn't bad, and he's cheap enough that if you're ever just like, well, I have less than 100 points and a free heavy slot. But again, like when you compare it to everything in here, the mech guns are a fantastic choice. And everything else is either a good choice or an okay choice.
Right.
And I think that's the problem. Like, that's why I have 10 of them. Because I was just like, you know what? No, like, it just, these are great. Even if I am playing 150 points down with the tractor cannons because they only have Skyfire, so I'm hitting mm-hmm. sixes on anything that isn't a skimmer or things. You know, even if they're wasted, I feel okay saying that my 1,700 point orc army is still going to win the game, or has a good chance at winning the game.
Well, like again, it's how much points are you putting into them?
Mm-hmm.
They're dirt cheap. So and even if he doesn't show up with anything flying, and even if they're just sitting at the back of the table, A, your opponent's almost always going to ignore them, right? Yep. And you can sit them on objectives, and it's like, they're still good. They're still good. They're still doing what they need to do. And, oh no, something I shoot feels orky. You know, like, who cares, man? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. So, yeah, like I said, I'm hard-pressed to really look at this. I mean, if I were to just build a fun list, yeah, I would have Mega Knobs in there. I would have bikes, I would have Coptas, Storm Boys. Like, it would be so much fast attack, and I'd just go full mech, right? All trucks with bikes, Storm Boys, Coptas. Like, just get everything on the table and just blitz up the table and just be like, hey, if I win, I win. If not, you know, I kind of knew this shit was going to happen eventually.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the HQ, because I think that's the interesting thing to really talk about. Mm-hmm. We touched on it, but when you come down to list building, I still couldn't even find a place for the Big Mech or the Pain Boy. Like, you just felt like, yeah, okay, so what, one unit of 30 boys is going to have Feel No Pain? I mean, okay, sure.
Yeah, you know, and you know, the Big Mech with the custom force, I mean, we both talked about how the Weird Boy is a leave at home. I mean, as much as you want to be able to take him, he's not winning you a psychic phase, he's not defending against a strong one. Their powers are pretty rough. But I mean, like, when I looked at, you know, is it worth taking the Big Mech to give an invulnerable save to all of my shooter boys? Well, when I have the custom force field, he's ringing in at 85 points, and I was faced with the choice of take a Big Mech with a custom force field and, you know, and heavy armor, or take 5 mech guns that are just like the default cannons. And look at me hit my mic because I'm a hand talker.
Because I'm drunk.
And at the end of the day, I could not justify a 5+ invuln, especially when cover is so prevalent.
Yep.
Compared to what I'm going to get out of those 5 cannons, because the cannons can go solid shot or they can go a fucking barrage of blast templates. Mm-hmm. So why would I ever choose one single model to do that? And like you said, the Pain Boy, so one unit gets Feel No Pain? Big fucking deal. Like, if only I had the option to upgrade any knob to a Pain Boy, and that restricted his offensive weapons, at that point you'd just be like, so, do you want Feel No Pain? You want a Power Claw?
Yeah.
Suddenly you're giving me options that alter the way I play the game. And that's why, like, as soon as you just really started looking at it and you flipped through all of your choices, I mean, let's be honest here, you only have 5 choices that aren't special characters mm-hmm. in the first place.
Well, and they're so specific, right? It's not like a librarian where you look at a librarian and you go, hey, this guy can still fight. I can still give mm-hmm. him war gear to make him a bit of a boss. He's got this huge range of psychic powers that mm-hmm. he can use. He's still got power armor. He is still leading my force, right? Like, I don't feel like I'm shooting myself in the foot by taking a librarian. In this one, you take a Weird Boy and it's like, why would you take that over the other options that you're still not necessarily going to take? Unless you really, really feel like your army is dependent on that. But mm-hmm. your army shouldn't ever have to be dependent on that. I think it's kind of interesting when you talk about the Pain Boy because, you know, the idea of saying like, oh, okay, let's upgrade knobs to Pain Boy and then it's Pain Boy or Power Claw, which is a very interesting proposition because I think you'd have a pretty 50-50 split of people who would say, no, I would have everything in my army feel no pain 5+, and other people who would say, why would you even care about a 5+? Like, just take the Power Claw. Power Claw is going to do more for you. But yeah, what we get is you can take 2 if you don't want the Wah. So you know, I was so hard pressed to find a squad where I really, really felt like I needed it. And again, it would have to be knobs with the War Boss, with a Pain Boy in a battle wagon. And again, it's just so many points for a unit that mm-hmm. the odd last cannon shot or demolisher cannon ends your day, you know, and it just, it's, you can't do that this edition.
You know, absolutely. And the other thing is like, when I first when I first looked at this and I was going to sit down to make the list, I actually told myself, I was like, you know what, I'm not going to go the Horde because I've been doing Horde lists on this podcast for 3 years. spoiler alert, it's a Horde. So I actually thought, I was like, you know what, I'll do a Speed Freaks list because I think Speed Freaks are cool. Bikes are great. I've always loved bikes. I mean, like, back in 3rd edition, you know, I had that big unit of, like, 10 Dark Eldar jet bikes, and everyone called me an idiot, and I would win games with them because I love bikes. You know, so I was going to do that, and it wasn't until I sat down, I built the list, I'm like, okay, 6 units of 12 boys with the Power Claw, mm-hmm. you know, a shooter, all in trucks. But then when I really sat down and looked at it, That was when I realized that, like, there is no fucking way, because, you know, your truck has 3 hull points, armor 10 all around, open topped.
Yep.
So, you know, open topped means you're going to lose trucks by the boatload. But then when a truck does go down, I have to take an immediate pinning check, which means it's going to trigger the mob rule.
Mm-hmm.
I have to take hits on the entire unit, and the math says that I will take 25% casualties, and I'm going to take the mob rule. So I was like, if a truck dies, and these are Dark Eldar Raiders here, okay? Mm-hmm. This shit is going down. Like,
it's yelling timber.
No matter how much you hope otherwise, especially because they changed the Big Mech's custom force field to not be able, to not allow you to blanket your invuln saves, mm-hmm. which I feel... If they had left, then you'd say, okay, skip the war boss, 2 Big Mechs, custom force fields. I run the trucks in packs of 3, so I'm still getting 30 boys off on a charge, and I'm able to protect them all, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. But I can't do that. So when I look, so when you work it out.
Because it was so broken before.
Oh, I mean, right? I mean, dude, 12 orcs, crazy. And the 5-plus invulnerable save. We, you know, ask a demon player, they'll make at least 80% of those. But... The fact of the matter is when a truck explodes, because it's not even an if,
mm-hmm.
the math says I lose 5 guys, I'm going to trigger 2 mob checks, one of which I'm bound to fail, because again, math, it's mm-hmm. a bitch, ain't it? And then I'm losing another D6 guys, or I'm falling back
mm-hmm.
if I roll the 1, so with the boss pole, and that's what I was looking at, I'm like, fuck me, when a truck goes down, I lose almost the entire unit, mm-hmm. potentially to the mob rule twice in a row. Like, no. Like, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it really makes you wonder, did the design team look at it from that perspective and say, you know, did they ever stop and say what happens when somebody plays Speed Freaks or somebody's playing an army with a lot of boys and trucks? You know, they're going to be dealing with this double mob rule triggering, doing all this extra damage where it's like, I mean, just picture it in your head. Last cannon hits a truck, truck explodes, bunch of boys die, they get mad, start fighting each other, bunch more boys die, and then there's 2 guys left, and they go, shit, run. Like, it's, I don't know, man. Like, I just, yeah, I can't.
And that was the thing, is when I was
the mentality behind the changes that they made.
You know, absolutely, because, like, even if all they did was put on this limit that says a unit will only suffer from mob rule once per turn, and after that, they're assumed to automatically pass any further morale checks. And that's all it would take for me to be able to say, you know what, trucks are viable again.
Well, or even if they just said, you fail once, you take the hits, and you treat it as fearless for the rest of the turn, right?
Yeah,
where it's like, absolutely. No, you're fearless now. You failed that one, right? You still have a chance you might fall back, but, you know, not this whole you're considered to have passed. Because... Mm-hmm. Then you're just susceptible to it over and over and over again, and you can be dealing with one check after another.
Yeah,
and it's,
you know what, and again, that would be great. Is like, if you fail, you are considered to be, you know, fearless for the rest of the turn. That's all it would have taken for me to say, you know what, trucks are viable, because again, right now it's an issue of okay, truck get, you know, last cannon hits it, blows it up, I lose 5 guys. Mm-hmm. So first I take my automatic check because I was inside an exploding vehicle. Let's say I roll I fail it, use my boss pull to make sure that I take D6 strength 4 hits. Then I have to take a minus 25% morale check. Let's say I fail that, another D6. So now I've taken, on average, 7 additional strength 4 hits, which is killing another 3 guys. And you're mm-hmm. like, come on. Like, you know, just cut me some slack somewhere. Please.
Well, and even if you're paying for, like, the heavy armor upgrade on them, it's still not necessarily saving your bacon, right? Like, it's just too much. And, I mean, even after this conversation right now, I would go back and change my list and just take the 2 trucks out right away. Like, I would just be like, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to go with another bail. Like, I would just
do... You didn't realize
the double... No. I didn't ever put that together until you brought it up. And I was like, oh, that is the dumbest idea. I'm going to go just 3 squads of 30 boys with shooters. Like... It's, oh my God, man, that's so,
you know, but bad. Like, that's the thing, because, like, I wanted to, listen, I intentionally sat down and made a Speed Freaks list because I was like, I always do the Horde. Guard, Horde. Tyranids, Horde. Like, Marines, Horde. Like, I Horde Marine armies.
Whereas I tend to mech up, right?
You know, totally. So that's why I was just like, you know what? I'm going to break it. I think bikes are great. I think two units of 15 bikes with a unit of 30 Storm Boys and then nothing but Truck Boys, you know, and I think that'd be a stupidly fast, interesting list. But then, like I said, I was really sitting down and just considering it, and I was like, double mob rules ruins it. Because, like, that is, like, old school fucking fifth, you know, it's like, what was it, fourth edition. Old school fourth edition when a vehicle exploded, and, like, my Dark Eldar, it's just like, so I lost 9 out of 10 witches. Well, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do with one guy? Yeah, you can't do anything.
Yeah. Here's what's interesting. When you're list building for the new Orc Codex, you find yourself in this weird predicament because you want to play Orcs almost as they're intended to be played, which is rush up the table, get into close combat, and just run over your opponent, right? Like, just overwhelm them and, you know, shoot the crap out of them and let it be hilarious and let it be awesome, win or lose. The problem is, when you build these lists, it's all of the outside of the core stuff that's all of your aggressive, right? Like, everything else that you build is sitting back, gunlining it on the back of the table, or moving up partway up the table to try to maybe jump on an objective. So, you know, you end up playing this, you know, almost gunline orc army where, yeah, I'm going to maybe move up a little bit, but I'm going to move up a little bit and stand on an objective and spread out, and then I've got this unit of Storm Boys, and I've got this unit of bikes slash Coptas that are my really only aggressive part of the list. They're the only ones moving up the table trying to get into combat and really, you know, essentially hurting my opponent while I claim points. And because the tactics cards that we got for the Orcs really didn't...
Yeah.
There's no pushing you there. Like, there's nothing that makes you play Orky in those cards. Mm-hmm. You're going to do the exact same thing. You're going to stand on objectives. You're going to wait. You're going to get your points. And, you know, even if you're just playing the standard missions out of the rulebook, that's all you're going to be doing. You know, like, there's no reason to leave your guns behind or run your boys up the table for three turns trying to get into combat on the edge. Maybe if you're playing against Tau, but if those units that you put up the table, like your bikes and your Storm Boys, can't get the job done, there's no point in trying to run up the table and throw away your objectives to try to take the Tau out.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly
your only way to win is to try to stop them from getting the game winning objective. Like, you know, he's got a couple, yeah, you got a couple. You're just trying to stop him from getting those game winning objectives.
And, you know, and that's exactly it. That's why you're going to use your 30 boys. You're going to put them in that 4+ cover save objective piece, and you're going to spread them out to the point where no one can contest it. You know, so they're, you know, you're forcing your opponent to come tank shock you to move you around. And better hope it's a troops, you know, a dedicated troop transport. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. I still claim it objective secured.
Yep.
You know, or, and if you're playing Tau'dar where they're just running pure gun line, you're just going to laugh your way to the bank because all you're going to do is you're going to camp on your objective secured objectives and you're just going to go to ground every single fucking turn because they'll never kill all 30 of you if you're pulling a 3+ cover save over and over and over again. And who gives a shit? You're winning the game.
And most of the time you're not going to necessarily be worrying about that because, again, they're going to be so focused on the bikes and the Storm Boys slash Coptas that... Slash mech guns that you're going to have more than enough time to just go ahead and get yourself into position. I mean, even if you pop some shots at you, you know, lets that gun line rip, go for it. But even against Tau, you're not going to charge them because you don't want to have to deal with the Tau special
supporting fire.
Supporting fire. Like, you don't ever want to have to deal with supporting fire. That's going to fucking wreck you. So yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to get into cover and you're just going to play the little short range shooting fight. Well, plus the long range pop at you. He's going to have a very hard time taking that unit down in cover going to ground.
You know, and again, like, you know, even when you look at like that bullshit 35 point Grot squad, the fact of the matter is those models are so small that being able to literally hide them from line of sight behind your typical board terrain. Right. So I'm going to be claiming this objective with objective secured, and you can't even shoot at me to get rid of this piddly little worthless squad. So, like, there are so many things where, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm just going to get onto my objectives, and I'm going to hang out and not worry about a fucking thing. So I feel like, you know, whether it's a Maelstrom mission, because, again, Maelstrom missions, half of them are you sitting on this objective-based fucking points? You know, and the other half is doing things you want to do anyway. Did I destroy a unit with shooting? Yup, I got 90 shooter boys, and I got mech guns. Oh, did I destroy a unit with combat? Hell yeah, I got my bikes up in their face, and I got my storm boys, who will reliably pull off a turn two charge. Because, what is it? Not counting the charge distance, statistically speaking, that unit moves 38 inches before they declare a charge.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take into account the 12 inches up that most scenarios have you deploying, that's 50 inches. You can touch anything on the board.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they are a guaranteed turn two charge with the WA.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, here's what you can say you like about orcs. There are going to be very few armies, few codexes out there that are going to do it better than orcs. As you pointed out earlier, one of the big things with Tyranids is really playing that objective game and spreading out to the point where they're going to be hard pressed to take that objective from you without charging you. But again, orcs will do it better. Orcs will do it better. They're going to do it better than Tau or Eldar. And it is going to be one of those things where you're going to feel like it's working for you, but it's not going to feel like orcs. And that's what makes it, I don't know, like I said, it's very strange because I couldn't get away from that when I was building the list. But again, the only reason why you take the war boss is so that you've got the WA for your storm boys.
Well, that and the rest of your HQ choices kind of suck.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing great about it. Like, you know, because again, who is building their list around Ludas and is going to just be like, yeah, Captain Badruk, man. Cannot go without him for my Luda list.
Like, well, and it's like Commandos didn't make either of our list because you have to take the special character.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing is like, you know, and again, like, I have no elites and I wanted to take elites. Again, my first list had the Mega Knobs and I was like, I can't justify them. I love the models. I've always loved Knobs and Mega Armor. I've always thought that they were cool. I love the new plastic kit. I think it's fantastic. They were the first thing cut because when I priced out the unit of them with my war boss in a battle wagon, I looked at it and said, that is literally the same cost as 30 storm boys and 15 bikers. Fuck no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these 45 other models are going to do so much more work for me. Like, there's no possible way that I could justify taking this. And then you look at knobs. You know, if I put knobs on bikes, they cost more than Space Marine Terminators, and they are nowhere near as effective. So, of course I'm not going to take that. Then you look at Commandos, and you're just like, they're the poor man's combat boy, and Burn Boys are too expensive, and Tank Busters, yep, as quirky as their rules are, at 14 points per model, I'm getting Storm Boys at 9. I'm getting Bikes at 18. So how can I say a Tank Buster, like, it just... Their points costs are so weird. Like, if I had Tank Busters at 10 points, I'd have probably grabbed two units of them and put them in trucks, consequences be damned.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can shoot over top of the trucks, and at 10 points per guy, for melta bombs and a rocket, I feel like that is just perfect. But at 14 points, you start comparing them to literally the same, like, literally the rest of the book. And you're just like, well, he's 5 points more expensive than a Storm Boy, and the Storm Boy's doing better things for me. And he's 4 points cheaper than a war bike, and a war biker's doing better things for me.
Yeah.
And he's twice the cost of a shooter boy, and the shooter boy is doing good things for me. So you're just like, no matter how you cut it, all of their elites fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And all of their heavies that aren't mech guns fall apart. You know, the only force org slot that I felt there was any competition in was the fast attack. Because, yep, you know, I wanted to take Def Coptas. I cut them for mech guns, yep, being perfectly honest. Because I was just like, oh, you know what? Def Coptas, they're great. I love the fact that they have scout moves. They can take...
Yeah, it's great. They're cheaper now. You know,
fucking chain fists. Like, lots of good things for them. But, sorry, mech guns at, yep, 18 points a model.
Yep.
Holy shit, those are good.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's orcs for you guys. I think if we're going to round out... Again, I want to talk about the positives, because as much as we're complaining here,
yes,
there's good stuff here. Like I said, I like the changes that we saw when it came to prices changing. I liked the way the new units look. I like the rules on the majority of the new units. And I think that for the most part, it wasn't that they took this army and shit on it, right? Like, it wasn't a systems of battle treatment here. There was no demon hosting happening. It was just the weird tweak to the Ma rule just throws everything into disarray. If they had, I'll ask you this, Nathan. If they had left mob rule as it was, as we've known it for years, how different would your list be?
You know, honestly, my list, it wouldn't be very different. Because to me, the biggest thing that I missed from this Orc Codex from the last was HQ choices that modify my Force Orc slot. Because, I mean, in the last book, I could have taken Wazdaka to make Bikes troops. And that changes the orc list I'm building. A war boss made Nobs troops. And again, that changes the things that you can do and the type of list you're going to build.
Yeah, but we know we're not seeing that ever again.
I know. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the old orc list had, if you took specific HQs, had potentially four different troops choices in boys, grots, Nobs, and bikes. Now I only have two. And so I don't feel like the mob rule is dictating the way I play because, you know what, maybe I would have taken that Speed Freaks list. Maybe I wouldn't. It's hard to say if mob rule had been the same as it had always been. I feel like Speed Freaks would be more viable with the mob rule as it is. Or rather, as it was, not as it is.
I think as soon as you start talking about 40K in the psychology aspect of the game, there's very, very few armies that ever had to deal with psychology, right? If you are an Imperial Guard, you're kind of always dealing with either full-on leadership 10 or fearless. And, or, you know, they shall know no fear.
Yeah.
So, to have an army that was previously fearless go from that and, like, reliable fearless, I guess is how I'll say it, to something completely unreliable that's doing damage to you, that's essentially chewing up your units for doing what units can force you to do with, you know, various weapons. It just seems very strange because now suddenly a pinning weapon is doing twice as many wounds as it normally would do because it's causing all these problems and it's just stacking over and over again. And again, we might be wrong about that. There might be some rule in the 7th edition book that we missed that says, like, you only ever have to take one blah, blah, blah tester. Who knows, right? Like,
yeah, but again, pinning checks are immediate.
Yep.
Morale checks are taken at the end of the shooting phase if you've suffered 25% or more casualties. So you will be forced to take both. And God forbid that last cannon blow up your truck and then he shoot you with a sniper rifle.
Right.
Now you're taking three that turn.
Rattling. That's the best unit in the world if you're playing against orcs.
Right. No, but with that being said, I do want to go back to what you were saying about the positives. I think that positives for orcs is that 30 orc boys with objectives secured, even with the mob rule as it is a nightmare to deal with. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think in terms of positives, it's, you know, it's very clear that the game designers decided that the best orc army was going to start at 120 boys and everything else was just going to be salt to taste. So is this army good? Yes. I think that this is the only reliable close combat army in all of 40K right now because, you know, with random charge ranges, they have Here We Go, which offsets that, and they have that one turn where they can call the wall and they can charge immediately. So I could literally do up another list that is 120 slugga boys with 60 storm boys and like a unit of bikers and just be like, you know what, fucking come at me. Like, seriously, this list is so fast and I'm just gonna call the wah when my 120 slugga boys and that's an old school term, am I right? That's like two codexes of
boys. That's just boys. It's just boys, buddy.
They're just boys now. You know, declare the wah so I have 120 slugga boys that are charging that turn sooner. Because what did we say about, you know, wound allocation in 6th and random charge ranges? They push charges back 1 to 2 turns. Well, now with Here We Go and the Wa, orcs are charging 1 to 2 turns sooner. So they are charging like a 5th edition army in 7th. So that is fantastic. That is so amazing for them as an advantage. And that's what I like about it, is despite what we said, where you are better off camping objectives and with shooter boys and just spreading out so you cannot have that objective contested, you could build a combat army. Do I think it's as effective in a tournament scenario? No, I don't. Honestly, if I was going to Adepticon Championships, I would take the list that I presented here. Yeah. I wouldn't take a combat list. But does that mean that combat lists can't win? No, this is the best combat army in the game.
Right, I think with snapshots, with Overwatch, that's the right word, right? Overwatch?
Mm-hmm.
Right. With all that kind of stuff, with fortifications, the way that the game is designed at the point that it is now, it's like when we originally talked about 6th and 7th, it's still a shooting game, it's built for shooting, but with all this extra stuff thrown in there, it's very hard to table an opponent these days. And you have to get like the right matchup, the right dice, and the right scenario to find yourself in a position where you are able to table your opponent. And if you are playing the all-close combat orc army that's just charging up the table, that is your goal. I'm going to table him, I'm going to catch one or two objectives along the way, and then I'll win with the couple of points that I got, right? Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily guaranteeing you a massacre, right? It's not guaranteeing you the major victories that you're looking for. So again, people are going to kind of lean away from it.
Well, remember, in this edition of 40K, a table does not guarantee you the win. Nope. If your opponent ever has no models on the board, the game ends and you compare victory points.
Yep.
So the table is not what you're looking for. You know, it's not the goal, but an all combat orc army is going to rack up those victory points because you're going to kill a lot of units.
Yep, that's the whole.
Because like you said earlier, 30 orcs always feels like overkill.
Yep. Yep. There it is. All right, so, hey, Nathan, something shiny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on vacation, which means I see movies, and I also go watch fights, because I smoke and I drink. Like, that's what you do in there.
Okay, hold on. I have a question for you, because I had a roller derby doubleheader last night, so I didn't get a chance to watch the fights.
Mm.
Worth it? Because I was just like, that Ronda Rousey matchup was why I was like, and Chris Weidman against Machida? Hell yes.
It was a good card. The undercard fights were all kind of but all of the prime card fights were pretty good. Keep in mind that the Stefan Struve versus Matt Mitrione fight was canceled because Stefan Struve blacked out in the dressing room and had like an irregular heartbeat or something, so they had to like rush him off to the hospital. So they had to cancel that fight, which is unfortunate because I did really want to watch that fight.
I love watching Stefan Struve fight. The kid is made of willpower.
Yeah.
But, that's...
Unfortunately, that didn't get through. But the two title fights were both very good. The fights around those were both very good. The Uriah Hall fight is bizarre and awesome. I will tell you right now that in the first round of this 3-round fight, Uriah Hall broke his toe. To the point where the bone was sticking out of the side of the toe.
And does it go to decision?
Uh-huh.
Oh, shit.
He like, his corner is like, he's fine. It was like that before. And the doctor's like, fuck you. His toe's broken. Like, do you want to keep going? And he's like, yeah, I'm good. And he fights like his toe's not broken. He's kicking with that foot. Like, it's crazy. It is, like, and they keep showing, like, close-ups of it. And you're like, oh, my God, his toe is so broken.
Stop it. Stop it.
It's so good. But it actually ended up being, like, a pretty good fight. But yeah, like the Ronda Rousey fight was it was crazy. And then the main event was very good. No bullshit judge calls or stoppages, which is always a positive, and a couple of good finishes. So yeah, it was good. Like I definitely enjoyed it. It was a good fight card.
Good to know, 'cause a lot of them have been shit of late.
Yeah.
Just a lot of really, really boring cards where everything goes to decision because everyone's a Greg Jackson fighter and playing it safe. And you're like,
pretty much. Yeah, you get very few guys who really go balls to the wall, which is why it's just like, Chris Lieben can lose 8 fights in a row, and we will all still go watch Chris Lieben. You know, because like,
yeah,
it's just one of those fighters, right? But I also went and saw a movie called Deliver Us From Evil, which is like the new one with Eric Bana. It's like a possession movie, because my wife is a big horror fan, and so we ended up seeing it. And it is just like, it is why I don't watch horror films. Because every single thing is just like cheap scare after cheap scare. And by cheap scare, I mean something scary happens that is not scary. Which is just like, he's
loud
going
noises.
He's going through a house and meow, a cat is like in the corner and everyone's like, whoa, oh, that cat. And then like, it was a cat, a dog, a mouse trap, a door, a drawer. And then like, we're talking about like demons are possessing people. There was also night vision goggles. There was also...
Oh, that is the worst.
There was also a car.
Night vision goggles in a movie is a criminal.
Yeah, there was also a car scene that was... Oh! Like, and that's all it was. Like, the whole rest of the movie, you're like, uh-huh, uh-huh. Like, it's utterly forgettable. There's really nothing to it. It just totally falls off, right?
What's interesting, though, is that... So this week was Canada Day, right?
Yes, sir.
Terry had work on Monday, so we were camping the weekend, went back, left the kid with the grandparents who were camping all the way through until Tuesday, finally saw Godzilla.
Oh, shit. So, did you fall asleep?
What?
Did you fall asleep?
Oh, you didn't like it then?
No, I found it to be utterly, utterly dull.
That was one thing that I, like... When anytime a movie gets to the point where you're just like, fuck, will something happen soon?
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I mentioned to Terry, and obviously spoilers, so go fuck yourself.
Turn off at this point if you haven't seen Godzilla, but there's a statute of limitations on this shit. It's been like a
whole right, like this is an old film. As I told her, I wish that everything to do with his wife and kid had just been removed because it served nothing. Other than to take up screen time, where you're just like, good Lord, I don't care that they're in San Francisco and the city's getting ruined. Are they going to be okay? Because like I said, they're, when there was actually, like, I felt like the entire prelude leading up to not Godzilla hatching was excellent.
Okay.
Everything to do with that, Bryan Cranston.
All
was
Bryan
great.
Cranston parts in that movie, the first 20 minutes, was excellent. Like,
yes.
Drama... The film's going in an interesting way. They go to the island that's abandoned. You know, there's the whole
everything,
bit
everything
at
there
the start where he has to leave his wife to die. Like,
yeah,
good stuff.
And then they kill him.
Last
half an hour.
Well, and then they kill Bryan Cranston.
Signed up there was fantastic. Really, you didn't
shit.
Like Godzilla fighting the two monsters?
Pacific Rim was better. They
Pacific
made,
Rim was a better movie.
They made that fight scene. Seem cartoonish, right? And I'm saying this literally comparing it to Pacific Rim. In that fight scene, like the giant clickety-click cockroach monsters, right, who are like rubbing their noses and clicking, oh, I'm going to click you so good, baby. I'm going to click all over your click. I'm going to click you till you click, baby.
And let's be honest, everyone was just looking for hot monster porn.
That's it. That's all I could see. And I'm like, really, just going to rub snouts? It's bullshit. And then I instantly went and started writing slash fiction. But the problem was, like, you get to that fight scene and they've been blue-balling you for 2 hours, right? Where they're just like, oh, man, here they come, these monsters, dude. They're in Las Vegas. And cut to newsreel feeds of stuff kind of happening in the background. And you're like, really? Come on.
Yes, you know what? I enjoyed that gimmick. And let's be honest, it was a gimmick. I enjoyed it because... You never suffered from Return of the King syndrome, where it's just like, these guys have been fighting for so long, I just want this movie to end. So, really, right? Like, let's be honest, that is Return of the King. Like, no one lists it as their favorite Lord of the Rings
film,
because they're just like, this is the film that should have ended an hour sooner than it did.
Okay, fair enough, but...
I appreciated that they were teasing you and dragging you along, and you're only getting snippets of the film from the perspective of the people, or of the film of the fight.
Oh,
I enjoyed that.
The perspective of them was dull as fuck. Their whole plan was like, okay, guys, these monsters are attracted to nukes, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to put a nuke on a train. We're going to drive it through populated areas so that we can get it to the ocean. It's like, why don't you put it on a boat to bring it to the ocean? Like, I don't see why you need to drive it to San Francisco.
Don't you have planes that can take it from Kansas where you pulled it from?
Oh, shit. Boat?
No, well, like I said.
Planes. But then the other thing is, that plan fails 3 separate times, and they just keep doing it.
Look, the army doesn't move fast. No, like I said, I like the last half hour with the fighting scenes. Because by the time he uses the atomic breath, you're just like, they're not going to do it, are they? And then he does. You can see the tail start to light up, and you're just like, oh my god, I know what's coming. I appreciated that. I like the fight scenes. Everything with Bryan Cranston was fantastic, but everything in between just dragged.
Yeah,
and that was my big problem with it. Pacific Rim is definitely a better movie, especially if you like monster movies. Pacific Rim 2 is going to be good, I hope. I'm cautiously optimistic.
I will always be cautiously optimistic. I can't ever go more than that.
Whenever a movie is really good, sequels excite me and scare me because, again, let's not forget the Matrix trilogy. Sucking at the second movie.
All know that Guillermo del Toro has this bad track record of getting very high on himself. But anyways...
Jackson high on himself.
Well, he's not building forts of money yet. The thing with the movie where you were talking about his wife and their kid and that whole thing, I had to laugh because it was the dumbest plot device to try to add threat to the situation because A, earthquake in Japan, husband and father missing. Mm-hmm. She's worried and her phone's on fucking vibrate. No. Nope. No fucking way.
And she goes to work the next day.
And then she goes to work the next day.
Oh, my husband and father-in-law could be dead.
Goes to work the next day.
I better go in.
And does not check her fucking messages. Right? Like, did you forget you had a phone? Like, it's there. Like, how did you... And then, of course, she's working. People are dying. Monsters out there. Everybody knows about the monsters, right? Husband's still missing.
And she's just like, I better finish my shift.
Yeah, well, what happens, they're just like, hey, phone call for you. And she's like, I'm fucking busy. And you're like, what? There's no way. Next thing that she does that makes me fucking crazy is she goes, yeah, here, take my kid. No. No parent in the world would do that. No parent in the world would be like, you know what? Yeah, go ahead, take my kid.
Single people are writing a screenplay about what parents would act like. Sure, that seems reasonable. I have to finish my shift. And I'm expecting my husband on this train that the news has said has been destroyed.
Those nurses were clearly union. No, I hated the movie. I was literally falling asleep by the end. By the time they got to the end, I was just like, okay, the atomic breath was cool. Again, there were cool bits, the glory shots of like Godzilla standing up, you know, him swimming under the boats and all that kind of shit. But, like, all the hammy crap that they put into the movie with Godzilla in particular, where it's like, Godzilla saved the busload of kids from the missiles because he put his spines in the way. And I loved how the military was just like, okay, so here comes Godzilla. We know he's coming. This bridge is with all these people on it is clearly the best place that we should set up our assault. What happens? Godzilla just walks through the bridge. It's just like, are you fucking shitting me?
Yeah.
Then... you get to the end of the goddamn movie. There's the whole big monster fight. All the clickety cockroach monsters are like stabbing him with their mandibles. But like, you can't even tell if he's hurt. All we know is that he's having a hard time getting up at some point. Right?
Well, but okay. See, that is the bullshit thing that films do to avoid tougher ratings.
Oh, I get it. But it's dumb. Board. That's
like
I fall back.
It's like how The Dark Knight was a PG film, and you're like, no fucking way.
Well, again,
or like how Star Trek VI Undiscovered Country is like, we got a PG rating because all this Klingon blood, we use Pepto-Bismol.
Because
exactly. Pink isn't blood, so therefore not rated R. And you're like,
Well, it's like Captain America where like all the laser beams are just like in vaporizing people instead of killing them. but yeah, so then I was in the movie theater. I'm watching it. I'm sitting there with Ward and Jason. And they get to the very last bit where they cut again to the news footage and it says, Godzilla, King of the Monster, savior of our city. And I just, I could not help myself in the theater. I just said, what the fuck? And like, nobody got mad. Everybody was just like, ugh. Like, you just hear this like collective sigh in the theater of just like, oh my, are you fucking serious? Like, that's what we're doing? God, like, he just, like, him walking out of the city probably killed another 1,000 people. Savior of our city.
Well, and also, let's not forget that this is like 3 days later, because they've got refugee camps and centers and stuff. So they're just like, so there's a dead monster who apparently, what is this, like Superman? Yeah. When he's dead, he's not really dead. He's just in a healing coma. And I totally should have told you. Sorry, Lois, I didn't know.
You better not have fucked anybody while I was gone, because if you did, I will fucking kill you. No, the other thing I had to laugh at was like, talk about a movie wasting an awesome actor twice, where it's like, oh, Bryan Cranston, awesome actor, selling this movie, kill him. Now he's gone, movie's dry. Oh my God, we've got Ken Watanabe, amazing actor. What are we going to do with him? Fucking nothing.
Right?
It was just all, he was literally only in that movie to go, Ratatama fight, and Gojira. Like, that's all he was there for. He was there to be the Japanese guy that says Godzilla. That's it. How did the news know his name was Godzilla? Anyways, it's bullshit.
All right. Touché. No, I said, I agree with you. I think Pacific Rim is a better monster movie, for sure. But I enjoyed it. I was not upset that I went to go see it, but there was a point in the middle when I was just like, when is something going to happen?
What the fuck is going on here? Oh, wonderful. All right, that has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.